Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome back in. Hour number 3 of Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, David Beauclair, Nick Keyes are here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And as we do every Friday morning, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter and host of Talking with TD. TD, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
Hey, good morning. What's going on, fellas?
Not a whole lot. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. So, TD, we discussed this earlier on the show, and I think we probably brought this up with you a time or two, but I'm interested to get your thoughts on it now as training camp approaches. Whole lot of love being thrown the Indianapolis Colts way, specifically with Matt Ryan being in the fold. Are you still a believer in Matt Ryan, the player? And I guess I'll ask it to you this way. Do you buy into the narrative being thrown out there that Matt Ryan is a significant upgrade over Carson Wentz?
No, I don't necessarily buy into that upgrade. I don't buy into the fact that him going to the Colts suddenly makes them the hands-down favorite to win a division. I don't think that is the case. There were some positive things that Carson Wentz did. Obviously, there was negative also, but I think Matt Ryan is not the player that he once was, and that's something that I think people have to realize.
So what's your 30,000 foot overall view of the Titans now that minicamp is behind us, training camp just a few weeks away? How do you view the team as currently constructed and where they sit?
Well, I think most of, if not all, the questions are about the offense, honestly. You have the Treylon Burks situation. Will Robert Woods come back to himself by the season opener? What's up with left guard, right tackle? Seems to be Dylan Raidens, but how will that work? Will Derrick Henry be back to the same Derrick Henry that he was? I think that's really all the things that you have to be concerned about with this team. If there's one thing on defense, is okay, can Caleb Farley make it through a season and be the starter? That's probably the only question on defense.
Well, one thing, TD, that I was thinking about the other day, kind of interesting to me. So often, rosters, like, it's the back part of the roster that gets turned over during the offseason. But you look at this group, you re-sign a Dylan Cole, a Jeff Swaim, a Dontrell Hilliard, on and on ago. There's a number of guys that got a taste of it here last year that this team decided they like, brought back. Buster Screen's another one comes to mind. What do you think that does for this team to have the so much of the bottom half of the roster to have that stability this year?
Yeah, I think that's important, and especially last year when so many guys were hurt, those were some of the guys that helped carry the torch and keep things rolling. So you have them coming off of that year where they contributed, there's a heavy confidence thing. And, you look at some of those guys, they really help in special teams. You mentioned Dylan Cole. I think Dontrell Hilliard is going to be a pretty good option in the passing game, honestly. Catching the ball out of the backfield, he seems to be pretty good at that. So, yeah, I think the back of the roster guys that have returned, they will help. But the difference makers are the ones, your premier guys, and that's who they really need something from.
You mentioned Hilliard, though, too. Like, for 2 years, we kind of expected Darrington Evans to be that scat back, pass-catching guy, whatever. If Hilliard finally is that guy, what does that mean for Derrick Henry and the opportunity to maybe lessen his workload?
Yeah, I think the combination of Hilliard and Hassan Haskins, and you can't forget Trenton Cannon as well. I think those three guys could help ease the load for Derrick Henry. But they're going to run the football. Like, that's what they're going to do. And the one good thing about Haskins is it gives you that physical presence. But when you look at Hilliard, it gives you that home run hitting ability without Henry on the field. So that would definitely help.
TD, how big of a year slash, I guess, a test is this going to be for Todd Downing as he heads into year two with this offense? With no A.J. Brown, you look at the receiving room right now, it's easy to see why that's a concern for this Titans group. What sort of a challenge is this for Todd Downing in year two?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a big challenge, but last year was also. And even though a lot of fans will say he did a terrible job, he actually did a decent job last year. So this year, you know, at least you have a full offseason to prepare for what you're going to not have, as opposed to just kind of shifting gears from Derrick Henry to Adrian Peterson and Hilliard and Dontrell, Deontay Foreman. You know, I think this year that offense should be better, but you have the addition of some pretty key players. You know, Austin Hooper is a guy that I think will really contribute. So that's pretty much how I look at it. You have Tim Kelly in the mix too, so the passing game should have some new wrinkles, which always helps, and that's something that they needed last year.
I was going to say, we saw Jim Schwartz come in as a senior defensive assistant. Kelly comes in. He's got a specific title, passing game coordinator. Where do you think Tim Kelly's impact, maybe fans don't see it, but where will it be felt most in terms of what the offense is doing? Like, is it early downs, or what do you think there?
Yeah, I mean, early downs is very possible. Hopefully, for their sake, they're not as predictable as far as running on first down. And it's tempting when you have a Derrick Henry to run on first down, because typically it's going to set you up for the rest of the series. But, you know, I think Tim Kelly coming in is going to help, in my opinion, just from a play design standpoint, as far as like having more complex pass combinations and things like that. That's something that you saw really lacking on the first play against the Bengals, right? You know, you had no back end deep route to hold the safety, and he was able to base that was. He was able to just, you know, jump that route and pick it off. And I think those are the things you have to avoid, like have a more intricate route combinations and things like that.
Jerron Davenport on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, TD, obviously you brought up the defense. You know, on paper, it looks really, really good for the Titans heading this year. But, you know, Harold Landry has been paid, the money that comes along with that. You know, it's interesting to watch his career, because I think the thing that stands out to me even more than the production is the availability, and that's been something that Harold Landry's been really good at. I guess – you know, my question for you is the expectation that now comes with the big contract with Harold Landry, your confidence level that he can live up to that and have a season similar to last season in terms of both his availability and his production. I guess where would your confidence level lie with Harold Landry on that?
Yeah, I think he can live up to that, especially from an availability standpoint. I mean, there was a time in 2020, I think he played like 93% of the snaps.
It was absurd, yeah.
So, he definitely has shown that he could be a durable player, but they've made an effort to scale back those snaps and not have him play so much and get more out of him in maximum important situations, you know, passing downs and things like that. But he is really good against the run, too. So I think he can repeat that. And looking at what we saw in minicamp, you know, he's getting extra conditioning in and stuff like that. So the effort is clearly there. So I don't have any doubts that he could have another solid season. And this front, I think, will pick up where they left off.
Yeah, Harold Landry, not one of those guys I think you worry about saying, oh, well, I got my money, now I'm
right.
Good. You know, like that's going to be motivating to him, I think, to sort of live up to that contract. But the guys on the outside, the same. Inside linebackers, certainly different with Zach Cunningham in there. We saw a little bit of Zach late last season. What will be the big difference between him over Rashawn Evans, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a more disciplined pursuit in the rushing attack. I think he's a bit better in coverage also. So that's going to be the main difference. And you combine that with David Long, like they play off of each other really well, and you're getting heavy, big-time sideline-to-sideline pursuit. And both of those guys together, like that tandem is really good against the passing game. And you won't see as many, because teams did it for the last 2 years where they kind of schemed against Rashawn Evans to take advantage of his aggressiveness, you know, the play action, but also like you'll see combo routes, like a crossing route to go in front of him to make him jump that, and a deeper crossing route to go behind him, and he'll jump the one, you know, take the cheese, and then they throw the ball over him. That happened against the Colts at that game in Indianapolis a couple of years ago. Jack Doyle scored a touchdown that way. So that's something that you shouldn't see as much with Cunningham. He's a bit more disciplined as a linebacker, so that should help.
TD, last thing for you here, more of kind of a general league topic, but I am interested to get your thoughts on this with Deshaun Watson and his disciplinary hearing wrapping up here with the NFL. I'm just curious, basically just from the contractual standpoint of this, with Cleveland giving him the fully guaranteed money, do you think that there were other teams around the league that were really close to the same offer of Cleveland with $230 million guaranteed, or do you think that the Browns may have been more of an outlier on that part of it?
I think the Browns are probably more of an outlier on that part of it. I don't know, me personally, if you look at the finalists, some of them, I think Atlanta is a more attractive situation than Cleveland, but that's just my opinion. The Browns, they went all in, you know, and they got their guy, but we'll see how this situation works out.
Yeah, no question about that. TD, appreciate you taking time to join us today. Hope you have a great holiday weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, TD.
Thanks, you guys. Take it easy.
Absolutely. Teron Davenport, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Friday morning at 8 o'clock. We'll take your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. More of that coming up next. Join 1025-1063 The Game and Newton Motor Group this summer to help kids in Middle Tennessee as we team up with Souls for Souls to provide shoes to children experiencing homelessness in Nashville and the surrounding area. With school coming back, our goal is to raise $20,000, which will provide 1,000 pairs of shoes for kids, but we can't do that without you. So please help however you can by going to thegamenashville.com/shoes. All donations will go directly to Souls for Souls to give shoes to children in Middle Tennessee experiencing homelessness. Let's do some good this summer, and thank you for your help. Once again, that's thegamenashville.com/shoes. Newton Motor Group, a proud sponsor of Souls for Music City. Newton Motor Group, the best car deals in Nashville start at Newton. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025-1063 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025-1063 The Game. Robbie Stanley, David Beauclair from SI.com. Nick Kieser here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025.
Little Motley Crue for your morning there.
Oh, man.
Fresh off last night.
I bet that was a great night last night at Nissan Stadium. By the way, Brett Michaels, apparently like a medical emergency last night. He put out a statement this morning. I guess he's doing better now, but... no poison last
couldn't
night
give it a go. Time.
Couldn't give it a go. It's okay. Next time.
Happens, you know.
Yeah.
You get deep into your career. Sometimes you just can't go.
That's right.
Ask Julio Jones.
Yeah.
We saw it last year.
There is some of that. Indy Ben on the text line says, after listening to TD, you'd think the Titans are going to make a deep run in the postseason this upcoming year. I just don't see it with the major deficiencies on offense, how much better the Colts have gotten in the offseason, and the major upgrades in the AFC as a whole. This coming from Indy Ben on the text line.
Yeah, I don't think – I think they take a step back record-wise this year. You know, we talked about with all the changes on offense, if they can't hit the ground running at the start of the regular season, they could find themselves sort of – in a similar situation to where Indy was last year, starting, 1-3, 1-4, and behind the eight ball, kind of chasing it all year long. I expect by the end of the year they'll be a better team, but it sort of feels like a sort of feels like a 9-8 season to me, where you're trying to squeak into the playoffs week 18.
I can see that. I mean, the problem is you've got a number one schedule that you have to deal with. So, you know, Buffalo's on the schedule. You've got the Raiders, who I think are going to be pretty good with Devontae Adams coming in and some of the moves that they've made. Now, you do still have the Texans and the Jags, but to your point earlier, like, I don't think the Texans or the Jags are going to be competing for the playoffs or anything like that, but you can't tell me that not having Urban Meyer in there is not going to have some sort of a positive effect on the Jacksonville Jaguars. Like, Trevor Lawrence, there was a reason he was drafted where he was drafted. I mean, he's a really good player, really good prospect. You know, we can make fun of the Christian Kirk signing all we want, and it's kind of absurd that he got the money that he got. But their offense should be way better this year than it was a year ago. So, look, I'm not saying that you should be shaking in your boots if you're a Titans fan over the Jags or the Texans or anything like that, but they're not going to be as just downright atrocious as they were last year. I don't think.
No, I mean, this, you know, the whole any given Sunday thing is real, right? But
which, by the way, you lost to the Texans once last year, and were in a dogfight in the last game of the year against them.
Yeah, and you know, Jacksonville in week 5 down there gave you some fits for the better part of 2.5 quarters or so. And that's what I'm saying. Like, now it's a situation where you better play, and you better play well, or you're not you're not going to beat them. I just have to feel like those Jaguars players must be it must be so liberating to them this year, and the joy that they're experiencing has got to be worth a win or two for them, particularly early in the year. You know, now when you get into it and you're beat up, and if you're 4-8 or something, then it gets, you know, then it gets harder to get up for things. But but Doug Peterson is one of those. He's a pretty easygoing guy, relatively speaking, as NFL coaches go. And I think he likes to make it fun to be at work and do what you need to do. And it just has to be a completely different atmosphere than it was under Urban Meyer.
Agreed 1,000%. Now, I look at the Titans schedule, and it never plays out the way that you think it's going to play out. So I fully recognize that heading into this discussion. But there is a stretch here that really stands out to me, and I think stands out to most people, and that's beginning in November.
It's a doozy.
Kansas City, Denver, Green Bay, Cincinnati, and then you've got A.J. Brown and the Philadelphia Eagles. Like, that 5-game stretch to me, it's going to be critical for the Titans. And then
Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson in Denver. Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. Joe Burrow in Cincinnati.
Yeah. I mean, that's a heck of a 4-game stretch.
That is yes. That is where the Titans are gonna make their hay. If they're around 500 going into that, that's gonna determine whether or not they make the playoffs. If they're competing for the division title going into that stretch, that's going to determine whether or not they win the division.
Yeah.
Like I say, you know, with the Colts, I said earlier, Colts have five of their first 7 games are in the division. Like, they're going to shape the division race for themselves by the end of October. With the Titans, this is where their season's going to turn one way or the other.
John on the text line says Doug Peterson probably won't kick his players either.
Probably
a safe guess that he won't do that.
I covered Doug Peterson when he played college football at Northeast Louisiana.
Really?
Which is now Louisiana Monroe. I saw him play. I didn't cover him. I covered the University of North Texas at the time.
Yeah.
They were in the same conference. So I remember Doug Peterson from way back. He was pretty talkative as a quarterback.
Maybe he's bringing the Philly special down to Jacksonville.
Maybe.
Trevor Lawrence rolling out wide.
You know he's going to have some funky stuff for Trevor Lawrence. He's going to have some fun with that guy.
Wes in Clarksville on the text line says, I think it'll be opposite as last year. I think the offense will surprise us and rock and roll, and the defense will take a step back. This is coming from Wes in Clarksville. We've not seen a whole lot of that, like Wes throws out.
That is an original take. And you know, to your point, the schedule never plays out the way you expect. It's possible. And let's face it, Derrick Henry is the X factor here, right?
Sure.
Like, because if Derrick Henry's good, the Titans offense is going to be good. But the problem for Derrick Henry, the challenge for Derrick Henry is, and I went back and looked at this during the season at one point. I may have said this on one of my appearances on here, but if you look at all the draft reports from 2016, the things that were said about Derrick Henry in those draft reports are the same things that are absolutely true right now, which is if you can get him before he gets up to speed, get him in his first couple strides, you can get him on the ground, and he's not that scary. You let him get a couple good strides, get up to speed, get on some linebackers, some defensive backs.
You're in trouble.
You've got problems. That being said, Roger Saffold was maybe, probably, your best run blocker last year. David Quisenberry was not very good in the pass game, but was pretty good as a run blocker last year. You're replacing both those spots. Ben Jones is a year older at center. Nate Davis, not quite as good the last year as he was. Now, dealt with some injuries last year, but, you know, how often is Derrick Henry going to be able to get up to speed? And on a surgically repaired foot, is he going to be able to get up to speed as quickly? Is his top-end speed going to be what it was? These are all things, but if Derrick Henry's good, the offense is going to be good.
Well, I agree. I'd add one more thing to that. You know, there was at least, when everyone was healthy last year, there was the threat of A.J. Brown.
Like, yeah.
If you're a defensive coordinator, you better be paying attention to number 11 or he's going to kill you out there.
And when Julio was on the field, too, you're definitely worried. You're not. There's no way you're loading the line of scrimmage.
So you don't have that this year.
You don't have that.
Robert Woods, I mean, we talked about it earlier. Robert Woods, I think, is a really good player when he's healthy. I don't know that he scares you on the other side of the ball. We have no idea. Like Treylon Burks, we could be talking about Treylon Burks as an all-rookie team member by week six. I have no idea. But the early trends are it's going to take a while for Treylon Burks to get things figured out. So what does that mean for Derrick Henry when you don't really have a threat on the outside?
And even look at Treylon Burks' strengths, right? Even before he puts a lot of film out there, teams are going to look at this guy and say, big body, sure, great catch radius, okay, great. No cornerback, no NFL cornerback is going to be afraid of Treylon Burks running by him and getting open deep down the field, though. So, you know, there again, he's not even at that, even if they show him a ton of respect, they're still not going to be backing way off the line of scrimmage. They're going to be playing down close.
We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. More thoughts on the Titans coming up next. Also get to the news of the day yesterday involving USC and UCLA joining the Big Ten. All that ahead. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
But right now, you know, he's probably right where they want him to be. If somebody tells me he's going to be ready day one, I'm going to turn around and walk away because nobody knows.
You just can't know.
Yeah, you don't know. You don't know when anybody coming off an injury, how they're going to play or when they're going to play instead they start getting pulled and pushed and everything else. We talked about it with Taylor Lewan. He looked great. But what happened when he got into the season? When the real stuff started to happen, he looked as if a guy that was a step behind. And he admitted it.
That was D-Mace discussing Robert Woods coming back from his ACL injury. David, you brought this up earlier, too. I think it's something that's interesting to keep in mind. We saw this last year with Taylor Lewan and with Bud Dupree, both coming off ACLs. Took him a while to get going. Took him a while to really get back in the swing of things to recover from that injury. Now, I will say, you know, it's a different situation from the standpoint of Robert Woods is not 300 pounds, and he's not 285 pounds cutting that way. So the body style is a little bit differently, but he is at wide receiver. You're being asked to cut and move a lot. So I'm interested to see how quickly he's able to get back into the fold. He looks great now. Like, honestly, I've been shocked he's been back on the field as early as he's been back on the field. So I would imagine that's good for the Titans moving forward. But to your point earlier in the show, It is different once game time comes around.
It's been an interesting evolution, like certainly in my lifetime, of the whole ACL thing. I remember being like a teenager, a guy got an ACL injury, and you're thinking might be his career.
Yeah.
You know, some guys came back from it, some guys didn't. It was terrible. Then for a long time, it was like just plan on a year, and then you work your way back from there. Now it's kind of moved to, they've got the rehab process to where guys feel good, but to D-Mace's point, and I was talking about it earlier, like there's a difference between being able to run and work out and do all those things on the knee and being able to play football on the knee. And you're right, like Robert Woods is not going to be leaning into a 300-pound defensive lineman on every play and having that strain on it. But he's going to be running across the middle, and he's going to get tackled low with a hit on the knee. And I'm not saying that's going to wreck the knee again, but that's going to create soreness. That's going to create pain. That's going to create stiffness. There's all these sorts of things that knee has to sort of relearn to do. I don't know. Like when I've watched him run, like yes, it's impressive because he's running hard, but there's not a lot of knee lift there. Now, Maybe he's one of those guys. Maybe he's just a glider, rather than a strider, because there are those kinds of guys. I never saw him run beforehand, or certainly never paid attention to his running style, so I don't know. But that's the one thing I've noticed when I've seen him, and I've thought, if he typically has good knee lift, it's not there right now, so there's still work to be done. But it's asking an awful lot of a guy who had reconstructive surgery in late November last year to come in here and be your number one wide receiver in week one, starting in September or whatever. So that's
why.
But he certainly seems excited about the challenge. To his benefit, give him full marks, because he's not hedging his bets at all when he talks about it. And I would think the right mindset is probably half the battle there.
How do you view the Tim Kelly, Todd Downing dynamic of this? Because they did have a similar situation last year with Jim Schwartz on the defensive side of the ball. Now, I'll say this. The title is different.
Right.
You know what? A big deal we made about titles and Mike Vrabel and D coordinators and all that stuff a couple years ago. Like, it does feel a little bit different to me with Tim Kelly coming in as the passing game coordinator, and also just knowing his age and, what he wants to still, I would assume, accomplish in this league. It does feel a little bit different to me. So how do you view the Tim Kelly aspect and that dynamic heading into this offense?
Yeah, my take on the whole Jim Schwartz-Shane Bowen dynamic was that Jim Schwartz was brought in sort of to coach Shane Bowen. Mike Vrabel, you can say, well, he's a head coach who was a defensive coordinator. Mike Vrabel was a defensive coordinator for 1 year.
Right.
Jim Schwartz has an extensive history and a successful history as a defensive coordinator in this league. And I think he was brought in to sort of be that little birdie on Shane Bowen's shoulder, like, now make sure you're thinking about this here, and when you're in this situation, one thing to consider is this. And I don't think by any stretch of the imagination that Jim Schwartz is making calls or whatever, but I think that's how he and Shane Bowen operated, and I think it was a relationship that worked really well. I think they're similar guys in that they're really really analytical, and I think Jim Schwartz probably sped the learning curve for Shane Bowen a little bit by giving him things to think about. I think the title passing game coordinator for Tim Kelly is meaningful. I think he has come in here with a very specific role, and Teron talked about it. Some of the route combinations that we're going to see are going to be different. I think too, we saw it. We're talking about Derrick Henry. There was so much attention paid last offseason in training camp and preseason, and so much talk about we've got to take care of Derek. We've got to limit his workload. And then what happened? We got into the season, and for eight games, And you know, you can't blame Todd Downing for this, right? It's like, well, what's your best option on first, second down? It's give the ball to Derrick Henry. And they used him more than ever. And he got hurt. So I'm wondering how much of it is, look, Todd Downing, here's some passes you can throw on first or second down that'll get you 4 or 5 yards, get you into favorable situations with the chain, similar to where if you would hand the ball to Derek. Like, I wonder how much of that is going to be involved. And we don't know, but it feels like to me that that's probably going to be a big part of it, like to give, you know, it's similar, I guess, in terms of here's some things you might not be thinking about, but in this sense, or in this case, it'll be really specific of here's a play you should put into the first down package, and here's some routes you can use in second and short that you know, give you really a really high probability for success and things like that.
Well, I'm interested too, going along with that. I mean, you brought up the workload for Derrick Henry. It feels like we talk about that all the time, and I'm always wondering, is that going to go down? And then you watch Derrick Henry play, and you're like, no, they're giving the ball to Derrick Henry a whole lot.
And again, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's hard to blame him for that. Like, and I think it's easy sometimes to even have a plan to do that. And you're like, okay, well, we're gonna limit his carries here. And then you see him get the ball, and you see him get rolling, and you see the wear and tear that it has on the defense. And you're like, okay, well, why would we get away from that? I do wonder this year, with him coming off the injury, if there's a focus on that more, even though, you know, the injury may have not had anything to do with the wear and tear, but I do wonder if there's a focus on that more to limit his carries and his touches, even though you look at the rest of the offense right now and you wonder, well, where's the explosiveness coming from if it's not from him?
I think there's very much an emphasis on that when you look at, they drafted Hassan Haskins, who's a guy who runs hard, who doesn't go down easily, who punishes defenses, that sort of thing. When you look at bringing back Dontrell Hilliard, who can do things in the passing game and can still take the ball and run with it and break off a big run every now and then, I have no doubt that in their coaching meetings they are talking about all of these things. But here again, when you get into a game against Indianapolis in week 5 or whatever, and it's a 3-point game in the middle of the third quarter, and you know, are you going to say, well, you know, we said during the offseason we want to limit Derek to about 20, 22 carries a game, and he's already got 19 carries now? Like, no, you're not going to do that. The way you get Derek Henry rest is you get up by 20 points in the fourth quarter and you say, go sit your rear end
down
on the bench.
Yeah.
That's how you're going to get Derrick Henry rest. Other than that, this is the job of a running back this is the life of a running back in the NFL. They're going to hand you the ball until they run you into the ground. And the good news for the Titans fans is that Derrick Henry probably is going to last longer than most running backs would last in that situation. The reality is he's not going to last forever, right? Eddie George didn't last forever. You know, we saw Chris Johnson, you know, spectacular for, 3 years, and then a swift decline from there. You know, Derrick Henry's such that, you know, it's not going to be, you know, although a power running back, if he slows down, you never know. But it's going to happen at some point. You might. So, I mean, this is the thing. You're not saving Derrick Henry for 2026. You know, you're not thinking we gotta keep him going until then. You just give him the ball until he can't do it anymore.
David, very quickly, the news of the day yesterday: UCLA and USC joining the Big Ten from the Pac-12. Big picture question: what do you think this means for college sports, specifically college football, as we move forward? Because to me, it signals that mega conferences, super conferences, whatever you want to call them, are an inevitability, if I can say the word, at this point.
The super conferences are coming. There's no question. Everybody's just waiting to see what Notre Dame does. Once Notre Dame makes its decision, then all the dominoes are going to fall. But in the meantime, what we've seen is what we've always seen. Everybody's looking out for themselves. You know, remember, it wasn't that long ago the Pac-10, Big Ten, ACC formed an alliance, and they were going to work together.
Yes.
And now all of a sudden the Big Ten's raiding the Pac-10, and you know it's everybody is out for themselves, and that's going to mean the formation of super conferences. And exactly what that looks like, I don't know, but all the teams in the Power Five are not going to be happy when all this is said and done.
I don't think there's any question about that. Coming up next, it is time for Call Your Shot Friday. We'll take your bold predictions in the world of sports on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll get to that coming up next. We are your racing station, 1025, 1063. The game is Nashville's home for NASCAR. Tune in this Sunday at 1 o'clock for the Quick Trip 250. Also, you can join Chase McCabe every Sunday morning at 8 o'clock for Chasing Checkers as he talks to the drivers and gets you set for racing weekend. NASCAR on 1025, 1063. The game is presented by the Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025, 1063. The game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, David Beauclair, Nick Keys are here with you on this Friday morning. It is that time of the day. Time for Call Your Shot Friday. We need your bold predictions in the world of sports. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. David, I did say to you in the break, it's interesting to do Call Your Shot Friday in a time of the year where like nothing's going on sports-wise.
This is a bleak period.
It's a bleak period.
I mean,
although Wimbledon is fascinating right now on TV.
NBA Finals are over. NHL Finals are over.
Yeah.
College World Series is over.
Yeah.
We're basically left with Major League Baseball's regular season.
Yeah.
And some races and whatnot.
There you go. So you have to get creative with Call Your Shot Friday this time around. But we do have NBA free agency now. We do have NHL free agency coming up. So something to keep in mind on that front as well. 615-737-1025. So, David, would you like to go first? Or do you want me to go first?
You go first.
All right. So I will start with this. Well, it could be your show now, too. We'll see. Joe may not come back.
That's true.
He's left for 2 weeks. I'll start with this. Kevin Durant ends up on the Miami Heat. Kevin Durant will be a member of the Miami Heat. I don't know how they're going to do it because they can't trade Bam Adebayo for CBA reasons, but Pat Riley and the Heat will put together a package where Kevin Durant ends up in Miami. That's my first called shot.
All right.
I will be forced to root for Kevin Durant.
You will be forced to root for Kevin Durant. You're going to have to do that.
We've had a couple people on the text line say Kevin Durant to Memphis as their called shot. So joining the Grizz. So the Grizz making a trade. Now, I will say this. I don't know. It's a trade-wise, it'd be interesting to see what Memphis gave up in order to make that happen. Now, on that point, Ja Morant signed a max contract last night as well. So, Ja Morant a lot richer today than he was this time yesterday. So, good for him.
Good for him. That's a guy you can get excited about.
Yep, no question about it. All right, another called shot. I hinted at this earlier. Nazem Kadri of the Colorado Avalanche will end up with the Pittsburgh Penguins. He will replace Evgeny Malkin.
You did hint at that earlier.
And will
be
the second-line center behind Sidney Crosby, signing with the Pittsburgh Penguins in NHL free agency. The Malkin-Crosby-Letang era officially coming to an end.
It is strange to think of the Penguins without Geno Malkin. But the time is coming. You know, you got to get younger at some point.
You do.
They've had a good run.
I will continue my call shot. I threw this contract out there like in, I don't know, November, so I'm going to stick with it. Philip Forsberg signs an eight-year, $8.5 million per year contract with the Predators. Oh. I said it in November. I'm sticking with it now. Why not?
Look at you.
If it's $8.5 million, I'm going to take credit for it. I will take a victory lap. I just want the public to know that.
He's staying, you think?
I think it gets worked out maybe July 11th or 12th. It's like Gabe Landeskog from last year. The 11th hour, when it looks bleak,
okay,
it gets done.
All right.
Those are my call shots for the week.
I'm gonna spin forward a little bit since I'm only here for a short time.
Spinning forward is allowed.
I'm going to call right now, 2 weeks out, Rory McIlroy is going to win the British Open.
I like that. He's played really well this year.
He's played really well, and he is more so this whole thing with the LIV Golf Tour.
Yeah.
You know, Rory's one of the most outspoken guys. He's one of the he's got a lot to say. I think it's got his competitive juices flowing in a way that he is going to want to stick it to those guys, some of those guys now when they're all playing together again. I think this is you know, he's won four majors in his career, including the British in 2014. I think he adds to that. This year,
he's got a smooth swing, man. I love watching him play.
He's just a little guy too.
He is.
He's not a big man, but he's
fire on the golf ball.
He does. I've kind of been fascinated by this whole LIV tour and all the response and what the PGA is doing.
Yeah.
And it's
a lot of money.
I read a fascinating column on Golf Week a few weeks back, and it was one of the more interesting lines. I won't be able to find it quickly here, but it was a week after the first LIV event, and this columnist said something to the effect of, make no mistake, there are going to be more people going now, and these will be the people who didn't have the character to do it initially,
yeah,
or the nerve to take the PR hit, you know, while they let the other guys do it. This is the next one. And like a day later, Brooks Koepka announced he was going. And I thought that was...
Eventually you see the money and you're just like, yeah, I think I'll go over there. I'll do that.
Yeah. But I'm calling Rory at the...
I like that.
At the British. And then I'm going to stay in England. And I'm going to say that somebody not named Djokovic or Nadal wins Wimbledon.
I like that. I like that a lot.
I don't know who, because I haven't followed tennis closely enough. But,
John McEnroe?
It won't be McEnroe or Borg either.
I like that.
But after, you know, we all had our little nostalgia moment at the French Open.
We did.
With those two, it's not going to happen now. Wimbledon's a different animal. Fast surface.
It's time for some
younger
new blood.
Younger man's game. I think back to when Boris Becker was 18 years old and won it. Somebody's coming up. Somebody's
like going
to have themselves a big moment here a week or so from now.
I like that. Nick Kieser, your called shots of the week.
Yeah, so this is bold. But after cutting highlights all season long and you know, watching the games as well, two things on the Preds. I don't think Dante Fabro is a Predator next season.
Ooh,
I think he gets traded.
Okay.
I was not impressed with his season. I think he is a liability. I think Jeremy Lauzon is another liability, but we gave up a big pick for him, so I think he stays, and someone's got to go with this offseason. I mean, we saw light of, you know, David Poile starting to make moves last night. I know it was a small move, but...
Yes, Matthew Olivier traded yesterday.
I didn't care for that move.
Nope.
Yeah.
A lot of people
upset that the Biloxi Bull is gone now. Yeah.
But, I mean, he's one of those guys, clearly was not a Hines favorite. Spent most of the year in Milwaukee.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's true. And then my other take is, and I said this when I was talking to Willie, I want to say 2 weeks ago on the DDC, I think the Preds get Max Domi. I think he's a good veteran player. I think he's an attractive free agent to the Predators, at least. I like how he plays, so I think he's going to offer a lot for the bottom six, I think. And so he can step up if someone like a Forsberg or someone else gets hurt. So
won't be overly expensive either. I mean, he had 39 points last year, 11 goals, 28 assists, but I could see that.
Yeah, or you could see someone. I also said Andrei Burakovsky, possibly. Now that's, I think you see that more or less if Forsberg does not sign. So something like that may happen.
I like Domi. He feels like a Hines type player.
Oh yeah, his dad certainly was.
Has enough of an edge to his game. Yes.
No question about it. This has been Call Your Shot Friday. We'll take your bold predictions all show long on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. A lot of votes on here for Forsberg actually signing with the Preds. Does that classify as a called shot?
Yeah.
I know I just did it.
I'll give it to you.
Okay.
Preds fans
are they not the favorite to sign him?
Preds fans are. They were, but I would say the odds are decreasing steadily as we go here. It's a pretty rapid decline. But Preds fans are an optimistic bunch.
They are
by nature anyway. That doesn't surprise me. That's okay.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. 615-737-1025. We'll continue the discussion on the Preds coming up next. How far away are the Predators from contending for a Stanley Cup? We'll take your thoughts. 615-737-1025. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game.